Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
From Home Alone to Love Actually, Hollywood Christmas movies are as much a part of the festivities as Santa Claus and Christmas trees. There's nothing quite like watching your favourite seasonal film to get you in the spirit. But what makes them so watchable? In this episode, we unpick some of our favourite festive treats as we find out how to make a Hollywood Christmas movie. Welcome to America, a history podcast. I'm Liam Heffernan, and every week we answer a different question to understand the people, the places, and the events that make the USA what it is today. Returning from the faculty this week is Thomas Smith, Professor of American Literature and Culture and Deputy Director of Area Studies at the University of East Anglia. Welcome back, Tom.
Hello, great to be back.
Yep, good to have you as always. And also joining us from the faculty today is John Mitchell, an Associate Professor of American Studies at the University of East Anglia. He's interested in late 20th century US culture with a particular interest in the representation of gender and sexuality. John, I had the pleasure of talking to you about Forrest Gump a few months back now. Welcome back.
And thanks for having me back.
Yeah, and a slight pivot from Forrest Gump to Christmas movies, but I'm looking forward to this one. I mean, what are your thoughts generally on Christmas? Are you kind of mad for it, or is it a bit of a kind of forced festive cheer?
No, I mean, I've always loved Christmas. I've always loved it as well, because kind of, you have Christmas and then you have New Year's, and then actually you have my birthday at the end of it. So it's always been kind of like a triple celebration for me. So I love when it comes, I get very, very excited. But I am glad when it's over. So I'm not one of these people who would want Christmas every day, or like some of these people who eat Christmas dinner every day or every week. You know, once it's done, I'm happy for it, you know, to be gone.
Quick side question for you though. If your birthday comes that soon after Christmas, do you find that people try and like cheekily double up on presents and get away with just one?
No, because it comes far enough away, so it's January the 6th, so it kind of falls a couple of weeks away from Christmas. So
that's definitely outside the window of tolerance, isn't it? Yeah.
It is, yeah. So it's definitely a different time. So yeah. I demand, you know, more presents. So
And Tom, what about you?
Yes, I think traditionally I've been in the official camp of Christmas crazy. I published two books on Christmas now, so I think that gives me authenticating Christmas fandom credentials. So maximal, I guess, in terms of decoration and celebration.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll of course link to your books in the show notes. Nice little plug there. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
And let's just dive in. Obviously, we're talking about Hollywood Christmas movies. I don't know how much of a blueprint we're actually going to give anyone as to how to make a Hollywood Christmas movie, but we're going to talk about them anyway. So first of all, full disclosure, favorite Christmas movie and why? Who wants to go first?
Okay, I mean I'll go first if you want. Favorite Christmas movie, I mean, it's so many to choose from that as soon as I say one, I'll think, oh no, it's actually something else. So I suppose, you know, kind of, you know, if you put again to my head and insisted I tell you, then probably it would be The Muppets Christmas Carol, because it's both a great story and it's got the Muppets in with the kind of that slight irreverence that they bring to everything. And it's just a kind of joy. It's got songs, you know, it's got Michael Caine as well, who I believe was advised by John Gielgud to always play the same part and if possible wear the same suit in everything, every film you're in. So and he brings, you know, kind of to it, kind of his inimitable kind of deadpan kind of British humour. So so definitely Muppets Christmas Carol. But now I want to say, but there's also Elf, you know, there's also, you know, Scrooge, there's also the Gremlins, of course, you know, so
yeah.
Yeah, do you know what? I think that A Christmas Carol has become somewhat of a subgenre of Christmas movies with the amount of adaptations there are. But A Muppet's Christmas Carol, right up there. I love it. Yeah, great choice. Tom?
Yeah, I think that would have been my second choice. Because, as a 19th century text, and as you say, one that that you can't avoid at Christmas time, I think definitely has its own category. However, I'm going to say Home Alone, which is a pure nostalgia choice, because I saw it in the cinema with my dad in the late 1980s, and I've now watched it repeatedly with my own kids. And I think if I had to sit down and watch a Christmas film, it would be Home Alone as a first choice.
Yeah. It's a classic, and also the highest grossing Christmas movie of all time, I believe.
Well, there you go, you see.
Yeah. Oh, that was my Alexa. probably some sort of package that we're ordered for Christmas on its way. Kind of ruins the magic a bit. It's not Santa Claus, it's Amazon. I guess I'm with you on Home Alone and Muppet's Christmas Carol. Yeah. We have a bit of a tradition in our house where we, on Christmas Eve, will wrap our presents, get something nice in for dinner, and watch Love Actually. It's become a bit of a staple in our house, and yeah, we love it. But the more I sort of become a family man, the more National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation becomes increasingly part of my habitual Christmas viewing. So I do love that film.
We watched Love Actually with our kids last year, and it's just a slight public warning. Don't watch it with your kids, because you forget that it is wildly inappropriate in a whole host of ways, actually. So maybe save that one.
Yeah, it's for, I mean, I think Love Actually is actually a great rom-com, and I guess I'll come on to this further on, but it kind of epitomizes what I think makes a watchable and I guess a rewatchable Christmas film, is that it's not really about Christmas, it's just set at Christmas. And I also have that feeling about Home Alone. We'll come on to that. But I think, you know, it's interesting the films that we've already thrown up, because we've picked very, I guess, traditional, very popular films. And I think that says a lot about the sort of films that we gravitate towards around the holidays. I don't think we really look for stuff that's particularly challenging or, you know, Oscar worthy when it comes to Christmas films. We want something that maybe makes us feel good. But I wonder where that comes from. And I'm in no place to talk about that. So Tom, as the author and Christmas expert in the room, what is the history of this?
Well, it goes pretty deep, actually, unsurprisingly. So I think the first Christmas film dates from 1898, and it's in a pleasingly kind of transatlantic hybrid mashup. It's a British Christmas film, and it's called Santa Claus. And, you know, we haven't got time for the history of Father Christmas versus Santa Claus today, but it's kind of interesting. So it only lasts a couple of minutes, and it's literally about a visit from Father Christmas. So I think, you know, right at the beginning of the film industry, we can see people having a sense that this is a good meeting of worlds, you know, that there's going to be interest in Christmas moving pictures at Christmas time. But I suppose we should also appreciate that we're coming out of the 19th century, which is a culture that's really saturated in Christmas print culture by the late 19th century. You know, every December, magazines and newspapers full of Christmas stories, and have been for decades at that point. So it's unsurprising, really, that there is an immediate move to make a Christmas movie at the beginning of the movie industry. And you can see as well that adaptation, unsurprisingly, is also immediately popular. So the first version of Christmas Carol, of the scores of Christmas Carol versions, is from 1901. And I think it's called Scrooge or Marley's Ghost. And it's just a short section from the book where Marley appears, as you can imagine. And Night Before Christmas, or, you know, A Visit from St. Nicholas, to give it its proper title, that gets adapted in 1905. So you can see the crossover from 19th century print culture into Christmas movies immediately, really. I think, though, if you look at the run of Christmas movies, it's that period around World War II where I think that relationship really gets enshrined. Because in the span of about 5 years, you get Holiday Inn, which of course gives us White Christmas. You have Meet Me in St. Louis, which gives us Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, Miracle on 34th Street, and It's a Wonderful Life. So that's from, you know, 1942 to 1947. And really, those are like the kind of building blocks of what we think of as Christmas movies, I guess. Like, you know, the heavy hitters still watched today, still ranked high on any list of best Christmas movies of all time. So I think it's that Second World War period that really seems to really cement the relationship between Christmas movies, watching a Christmas movie as a defining element of Christmas. It seems to go slightly more moribund, unsurprisingly, in the 60s and 70s. I mean, I can't think of a kind of iconic Christmas film from those decades. Possibly, you know, in cultural terms, I guess it's not necessarily an environment where that kind of Christmas spirit is profoundly felt. But I suppose you probably get, you know, a number of TV specials from that period as well, like Snoopy's Christmas special, Charlie Brown's Christmas.
The infamous Star Wars Christmas special as well.
Well, there we go.
I was just about to say the Star Wars Christmas special. Is that 70s or is that 80s Star Wars Christmas special? I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, I think it was around like 1980, wasn't it-ish?
Yeah.
I think you have as well. I mean, Hanna-Barbera do a couple of Christmas specials around Yogi Bear. They do. I think they do a version of The Grinch with a kind of a grumpy old man.
And I suppose
kind of dragging it from my memory.
Yeah, you've got Rudolph, you've got Frosty the Snowman around him. But in terms of big box office movies, I think it is the 80s where things start to pick up again. That might be just generational nostalgia on my part. But it feels like that's a period in which you get, again, a kind of swathe of either Christmas films or peripherally Christmas films, like set at Christmas. So you've got Trading Places, you've got Christmas Story, which I think is more iconic in American terms than in British terms, but certainly is, you know, has a massive fandom. Rocky IV, set on Christmas Day.
The Santa Claus.
Santa Claus
the movie that comes out.
Santa Claus the movie is a big one. Yeah, I remember that one really being a massive, massive hit. And yeah, Home Alone 1990, Die Hard 1990. Although, you know, we'll get on to whether or not that one should count as a canonical Christmas movie. And then I think, you know, I think that's probably the period that reestablishes the Christmas blockbuster to some extent. And my expertise runs out very much at the end of the 20th century. So, if we have any opinions on the 21st century from there on.
I mean, that was a pretty comprehensive overview up to that point. But I think that's the point that we start to stray into this sort of flurry of like Christmas movies, slightly cheaper, mass-produced content, the Hallmark sort of era, as it were.
But I suppose you do have the Grinches in there in the early 2000s. The remake of A Miracle on 34th Street is it late 90s?
Yeah, mid-90s.
Mid-90s. And then, of course, you have, you know, Jim Carrey's animated Scrooge. We have an animated Grinch. So,
Just for the record, I think that Jim Carrey 2000 version of The Grinch is, I think, one of my least favourite films of all time. It's like noise and visual torture. Having said I'm a Christmas crazy, I obviously have some limits because that one I think is a repellent film on every level.
If you haven't yet seen the Benedict Cumberbatch version of The Grinch released by Illumination, who did Minions and Despicable Me, if you haven't seen that from a few years ago, I would recommend it because that is very good.
Right,
that one I haven't.
I haven't seen that one, but I am going to defend the Jim Carrey's The Grinch. I think it's a lot of fun, and I think he has some great lines in it.
Okay.
Particularly when he's going to the telephone directory saying "hate, hate, hate, love" entirely. So,
right, maybe
there's some good lines.
It's just Jim Carrey being very Jim Carrey, isn't it? Really, yeah. I mean. Yeah, but
so it teaches on the edge of room 101. But I think I'd like to say it. Yeah. So, yeah.
If you mentioned Hallmark, so maybe it's worth just kind of penciling that one in now as well. Because I do think that's a really interesting contemporary phenomenon. Because I think it's from around 2006 that we date the Hallmark Christmas resurgence. And even in 2009, I think they only programmed about 9 Christmas films that year. But, you know, over the last few years, Hallmark has been producing 40 Christmas films per year. And it is, really a cultural phenomenon. I think they get around 90 million viewers across the period. It's the number one channel amongst women full stop across the autumn and winter months. Hundreds of million dollars in ad revenue at this point. So I think that if we're thinking about Christmas movies, the Hallmark movie really is the defining 21st century expression of that. And I think there's another survey that said around 60% of Americans will watch a Christmas movie of some sort over the Christmas period, which is really quite a unifying cultural force still in a culture where I think we probably have fewer unifying cultural phenomena. So it's really a compelling live issue in American culture and world culture. And I think Hallmark's a really interesting expression of that.
It is, and I'm just sort of curious because it's people might like sci-fi films, but it doesn't mean they're going to watch some low budget monstrosity of a sci-fi movie on a cable channel, but people who love Christmas and love Christmas films probably will watch the occasional Hallmark movie. So there must be some sort of unifying criteria between those movies and the big Hollywood ones that we love that kind of ties that all together.
Mm-hmm. But the Hallmark ones are incredibly safe. They're like kind of romance novels. They have a formula. They repeat. I think one of the things, particularly when you're part of a bigger family at Christmas, is that you're busy. So they're also, you don't need to sit and watch them. You can tap into them and out because it's the same story, so you don't have to pay too much attention to them either. So you can have a busy household or be busy doing something else, I suppose their safety is part of their charm, also part of their problematic, because they do tend to be terribly white, terribly middle class, terribly heterosexual.
I think they've done good work on that over the last few years.
They have,
And to the degree that other Christmas channels have emerged that have positioned themselves, if we're talking politically, kind of to the right of Hallmark, and have explicitly tried to position themselves in a way that makes it clear that they are not interested in diversity at Christmas time, doesn't seem very Christmassy.
Upset many of their customers a couple of years ago with Single All the Way, with a kind of a gay Christmas Hallmark movie, and I think lots of people got very upset by that. They have tried to improve that diversity. Yeah. You're right.
I think they've put that at the centre of what they do a lot more over the last couple of years. And I would say a word as well. I would say, first of all, I think the Hallmark are really the heirs to the kind of Christmas literary tradition that I study in the 19th century. They're the ones who are carrying that torch of really programming Christmas heavily at Christmas during the winter months. And also, I think they share the same strengths as a lot of the Christmas literature from that period, which is an amazing inventiveness. I'm going to give it to Hallmark. They're producing 40 films a year, which involve essentially the same ingredients. And yet they still manage to innovate within that space. So I think there's something fascinating about that constant ability to innovate with a very limited genre palette. I think that's kind of fascinating.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Just sort of being a bit cynical here. I mean, you've both kind of alluded to, like Tom, you mentioned, the fact that it's, Hallmark is the most watched channel by women in autumn and winter. And, John, you mentioned how, there's a romantic element to a lot of these films. Is that the point? Is it, they're not really Christmas films. They're romance films, they're rom-coms, they're set at Christmas to give it that little nostalgic edge, but actually they're films explicitly made to appeal to women.
I'm not sure in some ways, because you take the Christmas element out and you lose something, and I think it is that kind of, at the heart is that kind of Christmas Carol sense of redemption. You go from kind of loneliness to kind of unity with a partner. I think it is kind of obviously that kind of romantic sentimental aspect, but there is that sense of betterment, of improving things, which I think is part of the Christmas spirit. And of course, the centrality of the family, and healing the family, which is kind of core to many Christmas movies.
So I think
I see what you mean. It is a rom-com, and you could have the same, it's like Wham's Last Christmas was, I think, was originally meant to be Last Summer. I think, you know, you can just change the terms, you know, or, you know, as it's parodied in Love Actually with the Christmas is All Around Us kind of version of Love is All Around. You know, you could do that film without, and take the Christmas out of it, but I don't know if it would be A, as popular, or B, exactly the same kind of film. But that's my take on it. Yeah. So that's in reply to your cynicism there.
Yeah. And I think we might think of Hallmark as kind of innovating romance at Christmas time. But again, if you look back at Christmas stories from the 19th century, you know, it's amazing how many of them are framed around romance, around marriage plots at Christmas time. So I think Christmas has always been a time for socializing. So I think that, unsurprisingly, is, you know, links to romance. So I think that's embedded in something to do with Christmas. And I think the best Christmas films, whether they're Hallmark or not, do more than just that backdrop thing that you talk about. And I think that's true of all, you know, Christmas literature as well, that actually they do get into some of the nuts and bolts of the meaning that we've given to Christmas over the years. So I think you started by saying that Home Alone might not, you know, tick those boxes, you know, that in a sense it is just a comedy action film set at Christmas time. But, you know, what's Home Alone about? It's about reuniting a family at Christmas time, which is, a perennial Christmas plot, you know, bringing back together a dysfunctional family and finding redemption in that. Surprisingly religious. I mean, you know, obviously we've talked about Christmas. At no point have we talked about any kind of theological associations with the season, because of, you know, they don't feature heavily in most Christmas films. But Home Alone has quite an interesting religious subplot. You know, Kevin goes to church. He finds kind of salvation in church. So I think, you know, you could say that Home Alone does more on that level than pretty much any other Christmas blockbuster you can think about. And it's about redemption, because of course the scary old neighbor across the road, he's a kind of Scrooge character. And he gets his own redemption arc as well, alongside Kevin's reunification of his family. So, you know, I'd say Home Alone ticks a lot of boxes when it comes to thinking about how it's a film that's playing around with the actual essence of Christmas, rather than just a film that's set at Christmas.
Yeah, and
can I just jump in there? Yeah, because I agree. I kind of agree with everything Tom just said, but I read Home Alone very, very differently.
I
read Home Alone as actually quite a very deliberate use of the word, yet kind of a queer Christmas movie, because it's about somebody who's abandoned by his family, creates a found family with the old guy who says kind of is being redeemed, who's also an outcast. So it's outcasts banding together. Most of the adults in it are kind of rubbish, you know. So whilst there is redemption, you can see that the old man is a kind of a redemption recognition arc. There, it's very kind of minor, but if you compare Kevin to, say, Charlie in Tim Allen's The Santa Claus, you know, his sole purpose is to redeem his father and to heal the rift between his divorced parents. Whereas I don't know if kind of Kevin does actually redeem his family. They're pretty nasty at the end, as they are kind of at the beginning in some ways. I mean, we have, at the end, it is a mainstream Christmas movie, so we have that sense of family reunification. But I don't think it's necessarily that comfortable comparative to other movies. I think Chris Columbus, who directed it, is kind of behind that, because obviously he also wrote the screenplay for Gremlins.
Yes.
So he obviously has a sort of a slightly twisted or different view of Christmas. So whilst everything you say, Tom, is very applicable to that movie, but there's also, I think, an alternative reading that, you know, sees Kevin as kind of more kind of a queer figure, sort of abandoned by his family and uncomfortable with his family and the outcast of his family. So
Home Alone contains multitudes.
Yeah, and obviously he writes himself into the religion, doesn't he? He hides in the manger thing, so you kind of writes, and you're right, it does have that kind of redemption arc through religion, which I think is nice.
Let's not forget that his family are quite useless, because they did the exact same thing the next year. I agree with you there. The adults are useless in Home Alone.
They're all pretty rotten. Why are they going away at Christmas to begin with, you know?
Oh, yeah. And I concede, you know, your points around, you know, certainly the themes within these films. They do tap into something that is a lot more poignant and a lot more powerful at Christmas. I think, though, narratively, when you look at the most successful Christmas films, fundamentally, they're not about Christmas at all. The ones that I think fall a bit flat and feel a bit two-dimensional are the ones that are explicitly about Christmas. But Home Alone, it's an abandonment story. It's an action film, you know, certainly in the second half. I mean, Die Hard will, you know, everyone has opinions on Die Hard, but that is an action film.
The elephant in the room is hovering over us, say Die Hard.
And it's, but that could be set at any time of year. I would even go so far as to say Jingle All the Way. That could be set at a birthday, at any occasion where a present is necessary and a dad is trying to get that elusive present for his kid. That's maybe a little bit more tenuous, but, you know, Love Actually does not have to be set at Christmas. I think there's very few examples of Christmas films that are fundamentally about Christmas and could not be set at any other time of year. I think the reason that our favourites are set at Christmas is because it carries that extra punch.
I think so. I mean, and obviously cynically you could say it's a good time to release a movie and you know, get people to buy into it. So, you know, cynically in terms of a business sense. But I think you're right. I mean, one of the most famous, It's a Wonderful Life, and, you know, which goes on for like many years once you start watching it. You know, there's so much build up that, you know, it takes a long time to get to the punchline of Christmas because there's so much setup. So, I mean, it's set in the childhood, it's set in the period, another year before, a couple of years before actually the main event happens. So, I mean, and, you know, that's often seen as kind of the, you know, the umbrella, you know, kind of absolutely kind of greatest Christmas movie. Yeah.
I think there's also a practical level to it. I think it's also the fact that Christmas is a time when people actually are likely to have more time to sit down and watch a movie with their family. So I think, you know, there's some element there that comes down just to the fact that Christmas is a time often when people are brought together in a space and have some time available. So so maybe that's just it as well. It's just pragmatics.
And kind of thinking about that, do you think that there are any films that have almost been adopted by the holidays as a sort of a Christmas film because of that very reason, you know, because it's just become a family favourite and it just gets shown every year and people just love watching it at Christmas time, but it's not actually a Christmas film?
Well, the band, the Wombats, have a song about Christmas that has the line in it, you know, turn off Back to the Future because it's a great movie, but it's been on every year. So, you know, Back to the Future. For me, growing up, there were two. One was a movie called A Slipper in the Rose, which is a Cinderella story, which seemed to be on Christmas Eve that I would be put in front of to watch to keep me on my mother's way. And the other one is obviously The Wizard of Oz, which, you know, was a perennial Christmas movie, which would appear somewhere at some point of Christmas. So,
well, that's interesting.
I think so.
You know, L. Frank Baum, who wrote Wizard of Oz, also wrote a big book about Father Christmas. So, you know, maybe there's something in there. These are very weirdly personal. I mean, the first one less so. First one, I would say Little Women ticks a box. Although I think that is peripherally a Christmas movie because, of course, famously, the book begins at Christmas time. And pretty much all of the adaptations do a lavish job on the Christmas scenes in Little Women. So I think pretty much any of the versions of adaptations of Little Women tick a Christmas box and certainly would play a role in my own Christmas. This is very odd, but in terms of my own personal associations, I have a very distinct and fond memory of watching Ken Burns' Civil War documentary at Christmas time in the early 90s.
Just gives you that Christmas feelings, yeah?
Which is, therefore, it's imbued it with a real Christmas spirit for me, and I think might be part of the reason I've ended up as an Americanist who spends his time in the 19th century sometimes writing about Christmas. So I think, you know, things can pick up associations unexpectedly from their consumption in that period. So I'll put a vote in for Ken Burns' Civil War documentary.
Fair enough. I'll add an equally obscure contender into that mix because my granddad always used to force my mum and her siblings to watch Bridge Over the River Kwai every Christmas Day. Apparently it was always on the TV every Christmas afternoon and he'd sit down and watch it, and much to the annoyance of his five kids who just wanted to play with their toys. But
I suppose, there is that kind of association between a host of Second World War films. I think Great Escape in British culture anyway has a kind of perennial Christmas Day or Boxing Day role. Sound of Music, I suppose, also historically. But I suppose we're less constrained to a limited palette of channels these days. So maybe we're less trapped by that kind of programming.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Do you think maybe we're getting to a point now where there's like an oversaturation? Because, you know, we've mentioned Hallmark, and their mass production of Christmas films was quite unique for when they, you know, they were the sort of the go-to sort of source of Christmas movies. You know, but now with all the options available to stream content and download content, everyone's kind of jumping on that bandwagon of sort of seasonal viewing. And it feels like even this year we're starting to see the Christmas content being sort of churned out, you know, whether it be through sort of TV specials like Hannah Waddingham or, you know, the new Eddie Murphy movie. And I think Netflix have just released one with Jason Biggs from American Pie and Heather Graham, which has been absolutely slated. But, you know, are we at the saturation point now for Christmas movies?
A peak Christmas.
I don't know. I think it's streaming. These are all things that are linked, I think, because you can watch so many different options. You know, you can end up actually, if you're very dedicated, avoid Christmas altogether through streaming. And I think saturation is kind of a way of kind of making sure it gets out there in a world where you can pick and choose between different platforms. You know, I remember when things were limited, you know, my dad would always, you know, Christmas to come, the Radio Times and the TV Times, he'd get them and he'd sit there with a pen and he'd circle all the things he was going to watch over Christmas and then circle it in a different color, all the things he had to record because he was watching something else at the same time, you know, in the days of VCR. So that always kind of felt Christmassy because it was limited choice. It was harder to avoid Christmas, but I think you could avoid Christmas now altogether, you know, if you wanted to. You watch a horror channel. I mean, I don't. Maybe you might see Jack Frost on there. I know Jack Frost too. Sorry.
I mean, I suppose there is a whole tradition of Christmas horror as well. This is the flip side of everything we talked about. I mean, I guess we've gestured to Gremlins, which treads that line. Yeah. I suppose you could argue that kind of reaches back to a 19th century ghost story tradition as well. So they're not necessarily incompatible. That sense of horror at Christmas. So that is a subplot. I would say, I mean, these things do go in fashions. You know, if you look at the sweep of modern Christmas culture, which you could probably say is about 200 years worth of popular culture at this point, you know, there is clearly an ebb and flow about the significance of different texts and different audience responses to seasonal fare. I mean, if you think about Christmas Carol in the American context, I mean, probably its most significant existence in American culture was during the late 30s to the early 50s, when it was on the radio every year, when Lionel Barrymore was Scrooge. You know, that was a really unifying piece of popular culture at that point. You know, we don't think of the radio in those terms necessarily, but you know, Lionel Barrymore doing Scrooge, that's it. That is Christmas from the 30s to the early 50s as a unifying American text. So, yeah, so I think these things come in waves. But if you look at the statistics, you know, in terms of, again, viewership for Hallmark, let's say, or consumption at Christmas, or that statistic that, you know, 60% of Americans will gather together to watch a Christmas film, I think probably we've got a while yet of Christmas programming. And maybe, I think, you know, there is something in that as well, that when we are a culture that, and I say it's on both sides of the Atlantic and across the world, really, that doesn't have that limited cultural choice, that does have, you know, endless streaming options, that does have the opportunity to avoid Christmas entirely. I think there is something about watching a Christmas movie that is not just unifying within your own family necessarily, but it feels like you're partaking of a wider cultural spirit. And I think probably we don't get that very much anymore outside of sports, maybe. So maybe Christmas is like sports for non-sports fans. That's how I like to think of it.
Yeah, that's an interesting analogy, and I'm kind of on board with that. Yeah, I am. And I also, to go back to your point about Christmas horror films, Krampus, very enjoyable. Krampus. If you've not seen it, it's actually, we watched it on a bit of a whim a few years ago, my wife and I. But if you're looking for something a bit different, that's not just like rom-commy and fluffy, then Krampus, go for it.
Well, that's a good bit of folklore as well that's drawing on. So, you know, that's that really is a venerable Christmas tradition. So,
And on that point, actually, about folklore, you know, everything that we see, I mean, Hollywood, let's not forget, is an American institution. But a lot of the traditions and the values and the kind of iconography that's peddled in throughout Hollywood Christmas films, they're based on very Western and very American sort of ideas of Christmas, aren't they? So there's this whole world of different sort of traditions and folklores that we're not really getting in Hollywood Christmas films.
Well, I'll let Tom talk about this mostly, but I mean, obviously the Christmas tree and certain carol saying certain speaks to Victorian ideals of Christmas, but Tom probably knows more about that than I do.
Yeah, I mean, it is a tangled web, I think it's fair to say. And I suppose you can really, if you're gonna find a rooting place and time for modern Christmases, it's probably Germany in the late 18th century. You know, that's where, in a sense, we import a lot of Christmas traditions from. And then as modern Christmas gets going in the 19th century, probably from around the 1830s onwards, obviously a kind of high point with something like Christmas Carol in 1843, which is as much of a bellwether as it is a kind of, you know, originating text, if you like. It's a really hybrid transatlantic phenomenon where America is importing lots of stuff from Europe and from Britain, and Britain absolutely, you know, is importing Americanisms back. So it is a tangled web. So I suppose you're right that, you know, the Christmas that we're talking about is a very kind of European-American hybrid with high notes from Europe, Britain and America, all mixed up together, basically. And there are distinctive elements within all those Christmas cultures, but ultimately they're kind of drawing from the same pools. So yeah, I guess, you know, they are quite limited in that sense. And there are lots of fascinating Christmas traditions from you know, the rest of Europe, for example, that don't really get caught up into that, which, you know, especially Italy and Spain, you know, loads of fascinating regional Christmas variations, Christmases that look nothing like what we might think of as a defining Christmas, that still absolutely are very, very vibrant and carry on today, regardless of whatever Hollywood is producing. So yeah, so I guess it's a mixed bag of an answer, but it's a really interesting, tangled story.
Interesting, yeah, and perhaps that's an episode for next Christmas, you know, traditions that haven't translated and made their way over to America. So yeah, watch this space. I think my laptop is clearly not a fan of Christmas because my internet is about to have an absolute meltdown, which probably signals that we're near the end of this this episode. But before we go, there is one question. We've alluded to it. We've mentioned it. But I need an answer from you. Is Die Hard a Christmas film?
Yes, it's a Christmas film. It's about redemption. It's about reuniting the family.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's got the whole idea of needing help and development as a person, you know, in John McClane and I can't remember the black police officer's name in it. So, yeah, for me, it's definitely a Christmas movie, and it's set at Christmas as well.
So I co-edit a journal called Comparative American Studies, and we are just about to publish an article written by a guy called Nathan Scholl. And the title of the article is "Yes, Die Hard is a Christmas Movie." So, if you want to read a definitive answer to that question, then that will soon be available on Comparative American Studies. But actually, he gives a really interesting history of it because Die Hard is released in July in 1988, and in its first years of first moment of release and the first years of its kind of existence, no one mentions Christmas in relation to it at all. So, I would agree with John. I think yes, Die Hard is a Christmas movie, but it's fascinating how, in a sense, it's become a Christmas movie. When it was a summer blockbuster in 1988, it was definitively not a Christmas movie. But yeah, so he gives a great answer to that. And I think John's touched on lots of the reasons why. But I think, you know, basically, it's set at Christmas. You know, that's it. That's enough for me. It's a Christmas movie. I'll take that.
Add some jingle bells and some snow.
It
is missing a kind of a saccharine child at the centre of it, though, so...
Well, also, actually, while I've got you, so also in Comparative American Studies, we've just published another article which outlines the way that Home Alone and Die Hard are the same film. So I'll leave you with that to ponder. So there's another one to tangle with and another one to check out.
This episode of America, a History Podcast, was produced, edited, and hosted by me, Liam Heffernan. A special thanks to both Tom and John for joining me for this one. And if you don't listen to us until the new year, or hopefully until next week, have an amazing holiday and celebrate whatever you celebrate, however you celebrate it, in the best way possible. Next time, one last festive treat for you all. I'm joined by Dr. Emma Long as I want to know, what is the War on Christmas?
Hi, my name is Kay Adams, and to be honest, I'm not so good with the aging process, so I enlisted my old chum, the filter-free Cara McKenzie, to advise.
Could you imagine being a porn star? The room would need to be really hot for me to strip off.
To be honest, she's not much help, but she is rather amusing. And along with some great guests, Joe Brand, Andy Oliver, Anton Dubek, Ruth Langsford, and Craig Revel Horwood, darling, we are learning how to be 60. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.